Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, August 4th, welcome, friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
Avi, with the midterm elections just months away, Americans are worried not only about who will win, but whether the process itself can withstand the pressure surrounding it. A recent Gallup poll found widespread concern about ineligible voters, ballot counting, and political leaders pressuring election officials. In New Jersey, we've talked about this on the show, a software error mistakenly registered thousands of non-citizens, and some of them voted. This has created legitimate questions about how voter rolls are maintained, but that case is also being used to support much broader unsupported claims about the security of elections nationwide by President Donald Trump. So today on the show, how secure are the midterms? We'll talk about the president's efforts to change election rules before Election Day, including efforts to pass the SAVE Act. We'll also talk about the courts, lawmakers, and states' efforts to push back. And of course, we have a couple of really smart guests to help us walk through all of this. And we would love to hear from you, our listeners. How much confidence do you have and the integrity of the 2026 midterms? Are there concerns that you're thinking about, like non-citizens voting, pressure on election officials, whatever those concerns may be, or maybe you don't have any concerns? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, hello, you can put your comments in the live chat.
Yeah, if someone has no concerns, that'd be an interesting call, too. I'd love to hear their perspective.
Some people may have full confidence. Maybe they work in elections.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Or maybe you have like a question slash concern. Where you're like, I heard about this theory of this scheme or this plan, and I just want to hear from an expert what they think about it. Hey, hop on the phone, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. But first, a trio of local news stories. Let's track back to February. You may remember there was an incident captured on video that showed a group of Quakertown teenagers scuffling with the borough's police chief during an anti-ICE protest. Well, yesterday we got a 20-page report from the Bucks County District Attorney about this incident. And the big takeaway is this: the DA is not going to pursue charges against the teenagers or the police chief, Scott McElry. Now, the report did criticize McElry for charging into this crowd of teenagers in plain clothes. He wasn't wearing a uniform. They called that decision, quote, ill-advised and calamitous. The report also questioned McElry's professionalism while concluding that he did not break the law during this incident. As for the student protesters, the report said a few students did break the law and, quote, assaulted police officers in uniform and assaulted McElry even after it should have become evident that he was indeed a police officer. McElry sustained several injuries in this fight, including fractured ribs. But the DA concluded that the students should not face additional charges. Five students were charged at the time with felony assault, but those charges were later dropped. The students agreed to diversion. So this seems to be, if not the final chapter, at least the final chapter before the epilogue, as we sort of conclude this story, that's been bubbling through Bucks County suburban Facebook circles and political circles for the last however many months, 6 months at this point.
Yeah, this incident caused a lot of community outrage and backlash. And we have to remember that when all of this happened, this was right around the time of the tension in Minneapolis between ICE and the community. And people spoke up. They stood up for the young people. But it just goes to show how quickly something can get out of hand. And there's a lot of still some tension between the community and police. And that is why the DA has said that they're going to engage with the Quakertown community and they're going to put out some recommendations, hopefully in the next few months, about how to heal, because we do have to move forward. And this incident was just, hopefully, you know, this type of thing won't happen again.
And story number two kind of has to do with Bucks County a little bit, Sherry.
A little bit, yeah. Pennsylvania Democrats, they are taking a shot at flipping the state Senate. And their big focus is the Philadelphia suburbs. Shout out to Carmen Russell-Sluchansky for this deep dive look at Pennsylvania State Politics. And according to his reporting, there are a handful of legislative districts that will determine whether Democrats maintain control of the state house and whether they gain control of the Senate, something they haven't been able to do in about 50 years. And right now, Dems hold the House 102 to 100. The GOP controls the state Senate with 4 votes, 27 to 23. And so Democrats have put up Senate challengers. They are targeting the 6th and the 16th senatorial district with incumbents Republican Frank Ferry and Jared Coleman. They both represent parts of Bucks County, as well as the 24th district incumbent Senator Tracy Penkiewicz, who represents parts of Berks County. And those are just a few of the folks that they are targeting. And I got to say, Republicans, they're not laying down. They're fighting back. They want to flip Lancaster County's 36th senatorial district by taking out Democrat James Malone, who won a special election. They also have, of course, Stacey Garrity, who's challenging incumbent Governor Josh Shapiro. But ultimately, Avi, Democrats want a trifecta here. They want to have a majority in the House and the Senate, and they want to get Shapiro reelected. And they think that if they do this, a lot of those stalls we've seen in legislative, you know, on their legislative agenda, they think if they get this trifecta, all of that will move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, no secret, Ferry, Coleman, Penkiewicz, these are the types of purple-ish districts that are in the, not the inner ring suburbs, right, but the more sort of a little bit further away from the city. And those have traditionally been areas where Democrats have targeted, whether it's a local or national election. You could look at someone like Brian Fitzpatrick, who's in Bucks County, running for the U.S. House, facing maybe some of the same headwinds. Democrats are looking at that seat.
Purple areas.
These purple areas, Bucks County, a little further out, Montgomery County, et cetera. It's interesting to think about the dominoes that could fall if Democrats win a trifecta. Like you said, the Democrats haven't controlled the Senate in 50 years, essentially. There's sort of a slight tangent we could go on there. But 50 years ago, Democratic priorities looked totally different. And so the issues I thought of, if they indeed get this trifecta, would be minimum wage.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Abortion rights.
Yep.
Marijuana legalization.
Marijuana.
Could that be on the table? Skills games, funding SEPTA. They've been able to push through education funding, but could they do more of that? So those are the types of things I'd be looking for if indeed Democrats do that. And then you take the second order consequences. If Democrats are able to do that over, let's say, the next
couple of years,
what does that do for, let's say, a governor who was thinking about running for president?
Yeah, because
how does that burnish his resume?
Yeah.
So I think these are all things that you start to think about as you think about the consequences of these elections we often overlook.
Yeah. For sure. Third story.
All right, let's head over to New Jersey now. A New Jersey police department made waves this past week by having one of its officers dress as a shrub and bust people for distracted driving.
A shrub.
You really should be watching on YouTube right now.
Because
the picture's amazing. Nice write-up on this by our own Kenneth Burns. This happened in Dunellen Borough, Middlesex County, last Wednesday. The borough had an officer stand in front of a tree dressed up kind of like Bigfoot.
Yep.
But instead, imagine if Bigfoot was covered like in moss. And also imagine Mossy Bigfoot had a pair of binoculars and was looking for people who were on their phone and not paying attention as they drove. And this is the part that really got me. Mossy Bigfoot issued 74 citations in just 6 hours by standing there dressed as a shrub. That's a citation roughly every 5 minutes.
You know what? People were so distracted that they didn't see the green binoculars Sasquatch standing at the corner.
It wasn't
so
that good of a disguise.
They
I think that's
get
important
what
to
they
note.
Get. And that is the point.
Yes.
That people are not paying attention. And I have to get serious for a second, because in the United States, 3,200 plus people were killed and more than 300,000 people were injured in motor vehicle crashes involving distracted driving. And that is in 2024. So this is a serious thing. And I just love that they had somebody dressed up as a bush, basically. And that goes to show how much people are not paying attention.
I actually didn't read this part. Did the guy come up and issue the citations while dressed as, because that would be extra humiliating.
But I mean, the fact is, you driving down the street.
Yes.
There's a guy with binoculars Right. And he looked like a man in a Bush outfit.
Yeah, it wasn't like...
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest costume.
They weren't winning an Oscar for costume design for this one. No, he very much looked like a guy who just happened to be wearing a fuzzy green outfit. Yeah, but if you're distracted, you wouldn't know the difference, which I guess begs the question, why do you even need to dress up like a shrub in the first place?
I know.
These people clearly were not paying attention.
And it's a widespread issue because if you remember back in June, Pennsylvania rolled out a sting for just a weekend, and they issued 700 citations and 300 warnings in just a couple of days. But yeah,
this
but
was 74 in at one intersection in 6 hours. That's wild.
And they got caught by
that's
a Bush.
Wild. Transitioning now to our main topic today, we're going to talk about election integrity. A lot of people have questions now
and
about
concerns.
How fair and free our elections will be in 2026. We want to hear your concerns, or if you don't have any, give us a call. 888-477-9499.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We are just 3 months from the midterms, and public confidence in our election process is low. According to a new Gallup poll, 2/3 of Americans worry that politicians will pressure local election officials to change outcomes. And half of people are worried about ineligible voters and ballot counting.
Yeah, and a lot of this has to do with President Trump constantly calling into question the integrity of our election system and trying to get more federal control over it. He continues to make false claims that the 2020 election was stolen and is pushing Congress to pass the SAVE Act, which, among other things, would require proof of citizenship to vote. He is also asking the U.S. Supreme Court again to allow new restrictions on mail-in voting with the midterms just 3 months away.
And New Jersey's revelations that a glitch in their voter system enrolled 6,600 non-citizens has only added fuel to the fire and led to further voter mistrust. So today, we're looking at the threats to the midterms, eroding voter confidence, and what it will take to ensure they are safe and secure. We have two great guests with us. Let me introduce them. David Becker is executive director and founder of the nonpartisan nonprofit Center for Election Innovation and Research. David, thanks for being here on Studio 2. And Nick Corsaniti, still wearing Nick's gear, as he did last time on this program. Mm-hmm. And you know, I got to let you take the victory lap on this one, Nick. He's a New York Times reporter covering voting and elections. Nick, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, and we'd love to hear about how you are feeling, you our listeners, about the midterms. The questions of the day: how much confidence do you have in the integrity of the 2026 elections? Are there concerns you are thinking about? You can give us a call, or are you not concerned? If you have no concerns, you can share that as well. 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our Facebook and YouTubers, you can put those comments in the live chat.
All right, Nick, I wanted to ask you first about what's been going on here locally with New Jersey. We teased this in the intro, the revelation that 6,600 non-citizens were registered to vote in New Jersey. Tell us again how that happened and what the political fallout has been from that.
Right, well, this kind of took everyone by surprise. It was an announcement by Governor Sherrill that due to a software error, effectively, roughly 6,600, or what they thought had been roughly 6,600 non-citizens had been erroneously added to the voter roll, and as many as possibly 400 had actually cast a ballot. And, you know, this revelation came shortly after President Trump had addressed the nation, trying to say that there is vulnerabilities in our electoral systems and that there were, you know, some 250,000 non-citizens on the voter rolls in four states, including New Jersey. Now, he never offered any backup to those numbers, and early indications indicate that those were highly inflated. And at the same time, that 6,600 number is likely far lower. About a week later, Governor Sherrill put out another statement saying that they had removed about 4,500 potential non-citizens from the voter rolls, but that the rest, they were investigating. They may have since become citizens. They may actually be citizens. So the whole thing kind of played into the exact political moment that we're in and exposed how this has become such a political football, and sometimes where facts kind of get separated. So almost always from the Trump administration and some of these political operatives who've been trying to make non-citizen voting a major issue, when they say these numbers, they're often highly inflated. Their initial investigations reveal, say, tens of thousands. But when a local election official drills down, it's often a tenth of that or a hundredth of that. You know, there's just very small numbers of non-citizens that have ever been proven to be on the voter rolls, let alone voted. And that, again, happened in New Jersey, even in their initial review. But at the same time, New Jersey, a Democratic state, having this issue was seen as a justification by the president and his allies to continue their crackdown and to try and prove that this is indeed an issue. So it really kind of came at a very hot political moment and kind of exacerbated everything that's been going on with these claims that, again, based on every indication we have for decades, non-citizen voting in the United States is not a significant widespread issue.
I wanted to ask you a quick follow-up, Nick, because there's some reporting out there that the Trump administration has made threats to some of these non-citizens that were erroneously registered to vote, and that there's a battle that could be brewing between the governor in New Jersey and the Trump administration over the actual list and names of these individuals. Can you tell us anything about that?
Right. And that also feeds into a broader fight, right? We've watched the Trump administration, mostly through the Department of Justice, try and demand unredacted voter rolls. That includes partial social security numbers, driver's license numbers, a lot of personal identifying information about every voter in the state. And they're trying to demand it. They've been suing the 30 states or so that haven't handed it over. And New Jersey is one of those. So after this revelation that Governor Sherrill had announced, the Trump administration saw that as justification that, hey, we need all of those names. But the Governor Sherrill and other election officials in New Jersey said, no, this is not part of the same, you know, battle with the DOJ. We're not giving you these individuals' exact information, their unredacted information. And that was even upheld by a court in the DOJ lawsuit against New Jersey. And the Trump administration has tried to say that even being on these a non-citizen on the voter rolls is, you know, enough for deportation proceedings or other kind of criminal actions. So there's a lot at stake here for these individuals' rights. And as of now, Governor Sherrill hasn't, turned over anything.
Yeah. David Becker, I want to get your thoughts on what this incident in New Jersey does for voter confidence. And do you think it does expose some structural vulnerabilities in these local election systems?
Well, I'll answer the second question first, I think. I mean, we all rely upon systems and software for so much in our lives, and sometimes it doesn't work exactly as we hoped. I mean, New Jersey has millions and millions of voters. Those 400 voters who might have voted in an election, as Nick mentioned, that is roughly 0.009% of the total number of voters who voted in 2024 in the state of New Jersey. So we're talking about a relatively small error, but whether it's technical systems or whether it's human error, there's always these things that can happen. What we have seen repeatedly is with regard to non-citizen voting, our system is not perfect. We don't have any systems that are perfect anywhere in the country, but they do a very good job of keeping non-citizens off the lists. We, my organization, my nonprofit, the Center for Election Innovation and Research, keeps a tracker, and it shows what Nick mentioned before, that as states look at the alleged claims of non-citizens on the list, often made during political seasons, often made during the summer and fall of an even numbered year, in order to kind of spike the political considerations that might be out there, when they're actually investigated, they get shrunk down to a very small number. And the reason is obvious. Why would anyone who is here in this country, either legally or illegally as a non-citizen, register and vote to cast one additional ballot in an election in which about 150 million ballots are going to be cast, when the consequences are that they will be deported and prosecuted? They will be discovered and deported and prosecuted. We have very strong controls against that. They are not perfect. We should always try to perfect them. What happened in New Jersey shouldn't have happened, but it was discovered and it's going to be fixed. And then with regard to the larger issue of confidence, we have seen an all-out assault on voter confidence over the last several years. There is an entire economy of grift out there that is making money by telling people that the candidates that they voted for didn't really lose. And they're lying to those people in order to profit off of them or to obtain or maintain political power. And some of those people are very, very powerful. We're going to keep seeing that. We are guaranteed to see that in the aftermath of the 2026 election by some losing candidates. But the reality is our elections are more secure than they've ever been. And we know that empirically. Our voter lists are more accurate than ever been, thanks to better data practices. We have had voter ID for voter registration since 2002 for a quarter of a century, where every single person who registers in the United States has to provide ID in order to get registered. We have paper ballots in every single state, meaning that those paper ballots can be recounted and audited to confirm that the machines counted them correctly. The only state that doesn't have paper ballots is Louisiana. Every other state does. And those paper ballots are, in fact, audited in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and every other state in the country to confirm that the machines counted the our votes accurately. Our system is incredibly secure, and it's unfortunate that our foreign adversaries and some domestic actors are trying to profit off of the idea that it's not.
Yeah. And by the way, I want to remind you of our questions of the day, listeners. How much confidence do you have in the integrity of the 2026 elections? Are there concerns you're thinking about? The number to call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Susan from Bucks County is on the line. Susan, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Oh, hi there. I wanted to take the speaker. My comment is, and thanks for taking my call, I was a committee woman for quite a few years in Bucks County, and I encourage people who don't think the elections are safe and secure to get a watcher's certificate. And you can go to the polling place and watch how at the end of the night at 8 o'clock that the votes are, how the votes are counted. And how the committee people, there's two from each party that are there, and the judge of elections breaks down the voting machines, and we count the ballots. We count the absentee ballots. We count the ballots that are on the tape in each voting machine. Everybody is watching and watching how each vote is tallied. We're all watching each other.
Yeah. And so, it seems
no
like
voter fraud going on.
It seems like
it is legitimate and it is safe and it's secure.
Thank you. That's Susan from Bucks County.
Can I ask Susan a real quick follow-up question? Susan, what's it like for you as someone who's watched this up close to see the claims that are made by politicians and folks in the media about or questions that they have about the process? Just emotionally, what's been your response to that?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I am, you know, a registered Democrat. And I vote, and I have quite a few Republican relatives that I have gotten into this discussion with.
Yeah.
And I tell them, you know, they talk about the elections not being secure. And I tell them, I work those polls, I watch it, and if you, I think it's a real education if people would get themselves involved and not make accusations. And just say, hey, I'm going to get a watcher certificate. You ask it, your committee person in your precinct. You can get one. You just literally watch the process, and they get quiet because then there's really nothing else they can say when you are telling them you can do this if you want to.
Right.
Instead of just making accusations, you can see it for yourself.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you, Susan from Bucks County. And by the way, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Again, how much confidence do you have in the integrity of the elections? 888-477-9499. We hear that a lot, David and Nick. We hear that a lot from people who say if you just participate, you'll see that there's nothing to be worried about. And so, Nick, this sort of goes to my next question, because the president gave a whole speech about the integrity of the elections. He sounded all sorts of alarms without evidence. And now there are multiple steps that the Trump administration and Republican supporters have been taking to sort of insert federal authority into elections. I'd like you to sort of go over some of those steps, and then we can talk about them a little bit more, because there's so many different avenues that are all happening at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, my colleague Zolan and I reported right after that speech, the Trump administration has almost taken like a whole of government approach towards intruding on the election process. And it's important to remember at the outset, the Constitution grants no explicit authority over elections to the executive branch. There's states set the time, place, and manner, and Congress can pass laws overseeing the election. That's it. There's no rule or role for the president or the executive branch. Now, without that authority, they've still tried to intrude upon the electoral process, whether that's the Department of Justice demanding voter rolls, whether that's the Department of Homeland Security launching their own investigations into, you know, claims of non-citizen voting, trying to use their SAVE database, which has been used in the past to check immigration status for benefits as a voter tool. They've, you know, used the Department of Justice to investigate claims about the 2020 election more than 5 years later, raiding in an almost unprecedented way a county, Fulton County in Georgia, home to Atlanta, and taking 2020 election materials from there. They've also sought materials from the 2020 election in Arizona. And that involves, you know, the FBI and other investigatory forces. So it's this kind of whole of government approach, trying to find avenues in which they can try and shape elections. And that also, the clearest is also the president signing executive orders, you know, trying to change mail voting, trying to install a documentary proof of citizenship requirement. But almost all of this has run up against the courts. So the Department of Justice, I think, as of today, is 0 for 19, although I know David tracks that number closer than I do.
Yeah, that's right.
And then both EOs have been blocked by the courts, at least as of now. The majority of them, there's parts that are still around, but the thrust of them has been blocked by courts. So there is a still, you know, kind of legal constitutional bulwark that is running up against these efforts by the Trump administration to intrude upon the running of American elections.
And I wanted to ask, I guess, about whether there are things that the administration hasn't done yet that seem to be bubbling somewhere under the surface that could have a direct impact. So, I mean, you hear people talk about stationing some sort of federal troops or law enforcement at voting sites. You hear about the federal government seizing ballots. You hear about some sort of scheme out there where the clerk of the Congress, maybe by Trump's demand, would be replaced, and then that person would refuse to seat people in January. Nick, I'm sure you've heard about some of these theories. Are there any that carry water to you, feel like real threats, feel like real possibilities, ones that you would focus people's attention on, or do they all feel a little far-fetched?
I think it's tough to truly get inside the head of what might, you know, come out in an incredibly contentious midterm where, you know, the president has staked a lot of his entire administration on maintaining control of Congress. That said, there are some very clear laws that would be nearly impossible, if not just outright impossible, for the Trump administration to work around. The biggest being armed agents at the polls. The law is just crystal clear. There's no any room for interpretation here that that is a possibility. And so every attorney general in the country, I'd imagine, has a temporary restraining order, a TRO, prepared that as soon as that were to happen, they'd go to a judge and it would be over within minutes if it even got that far.
Right.
So I think that, which is something that, you know, gets a lot of oxygen, is just such a clear, it would be such a clear break in the law that for it to linger long enough to have an impact, I think, is not a reality. That doesn't mean states aren't preparing for it, but that also doesn't mean that it could have a real, you know, chilling effect, impact on voting. Now, some of the more dramatic actions, like potentially seizing equipment, that would be a kind of new gray area. And, you know, the president told The Times earlier this year in an interview that he regretted not seizing election machines in 2020. Now, whether he has that authority is, you know, not explicitly clear, to put it lightly. But those kind of like new efforts where there might be some dramatic action, I think, is, again, where a lot of states are preparing. But at the same time, the law has been clear about where the president's authority ends on elections. And courts with judges appointed by Republican presidents, Democratic presidents, even Trump himself in the first term, have kind of sided on that.
Yeah. And I guess some people then push back and say, well, why should I be confident that the president will follow the law, right? I mean, that gets us into a territory I don't know if any of us can truly address or prognosticate on. But David Becker, do you have thoughts on that? Like, sort of open defiance of the law, of the courts? Is the election system at all designed to deal with that? Or is that just sort of at a level beyond what we can really address in this conversation?
Well, I think it's a valid question to be asking, how far is this president willing to go? And I can tell you that there are people in the administration thrilled that we're still having this conversation about whether troops might be at the polls and whether voting might be dangerous and whether votes will matter at all. That's exactly what they'd want.
Right.
But I'd go back to the things that Nick was just talking about. All of the things this administration has tried, they've dismantled the cybersecurity infrastructure within DHS to help with election security. They've fired election assistance commissioners. They've filed 30 plus lawsuits against states trying to seize very, very sensitive voter data. They have signed two executive orders seeking to radically change election policy. They've tried to pass the Save America Act. And not one of those things has succeeded. Not one. They failed on everything. They are literally, I'm a former DOJ lawyer, working in the voting section. The DOJ is 0-19, as Nick mentioned, in these cases. That's impossible to process. You couldn't go 0-1 in a case at the DOJ, and
yeah,
definitely not 0-2. So 0-19 is amazing. New Jersey was the second most recent state that just won their lawsuit. The Trump administration is losing on the executive orders. I mean, it is failing to come up with any evidence or manufacture evidence of a crime in 2020. They're failing on everything. So if they continue to try, they will try, but they're going to fail.
Yeah.
They're going to fail thanks to the courts. They're going to fail thanks to the voters. They're going to fail thanks to the public servants who run our elections, as Susan mentioned when she called in. And so I have every confidence in that. I think there are people who want us to be scared, who want voters to be scared about voting. They want people to be worried that there's going to be troops or ICE agents.
So you're more scared of people being scared mm-hmm. off by this than you are
yes.
about the possibility of open defiance from the executive branch vis-a-vis Congress or the courts.
Yeah, absolutely. I will tell you flat out, ICE and troops will not be at the polls. No one should worry mm-hmm. about that. There's talk today in Michigan about DOJ monitors being at the polls, and some are trying to make that an issue of big concern. I'm a former DOJ lawyer. I monitored voting in probably 4,000 precincts. You're a fly on the wall. You're never going to see any of these people. There are folks in the administration who are hoping people are scared about this, and this is nothing.
Yeah.
And voting is safe and secure in this country. In all of the states, there are many options about when to vote, where to vote, early voting, mail voting. It's so easy and safe to vote. And so reject that kind of
yeah.
despair and darkness, which some want to push. And instead embrace this as our 250th anniversary. Let's go out and have the highest turnout in midterm history.
By the way, I want to read a couple comments. Emily on Facebook says, my concern is that folks won't vote. Sid on Facebook says, I'm more concerned about voter turnout. Both Emily and Sid, similar concerns. Rachel on Facebook says, full confidence as long as Trump doesn't get his way with the SAVE Act. As a judge of election at my local precinct, I know a lot about how elections are run and feel full faith in them. Even the highly conservative Heritage Foundation has found no evidence of election fraud. And Nick, before we have to let you go, I do want to quickly talk about the SAVE Act because where it stands, you know, right now, and is there a chance? Because we've seen, you know, Republicans say they're holding the line, and that folks have said there's not enough votes for the president to pass the SAVE Act. But we've also seen things shift at the very last minute. Just give us a quick rundown of the SAVE Act and whether or not there are the votes, and could that shift before the election?
It's really impossible to imagine a scenario where enough Republicans in the Senate, which is where there's not enough votes, it passes the House because that needs a simple majority. But in the Senate, there's enough Democratic votes to filibuster the Save America Act from passing. And the only way to get around that would be to change Senate voting rules, which is known as the nuclear option. And as of now, there is just not even close to enough Republican support to do something like that. Because they view it as, if we do this now, when Democrats retake the Senate at some point in the future, they'll do it even worse to us.
Mm.
So that really feels like a kind of dead end. And I think there's also a kind of just important logistical element to this, which is that we're in August. I think we're 91 days or 90 days from the midterm election. We're almost in what's known as, you know, the quiet period, where the NBRA protects against any voters being removed from the rolls. And so passing a SAVE Act, implementing a SAVE Act, getting the documentary proof of citizenship up and running all before the midterms feels like nearly impossible. And so even if there were to be some political revolution and complete change in how Republicans in the Senate are feeling about their vote, the practical implementation of this law is really, really difficult, if not impossible. And I think that's becoming much more into focus with every passing day.
Yeah. Well, Nick Corsiniti, bad hats, but great insight. Thank you so much for your time today, sir, on Studio 2. That's Nick Corsiniti, New York Times reporter covering voting and elections. We have to say goodbye to him now. But David Becker will stick with us after this break. We would love to continue to hear from you. I see a couple callers hanging on the line right now. We'll get to you. We're talking about election security, voter confidence in elections, and more. How confident are you in the integrity of the 2026 midterms? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are talking about election integrity ahead of the midterms and the efforts by President Trump to call the election system into question. 2 in 3 Americans say they are worried that officials will be pressured to change election outcomes. So how concerned should we really be? What safeguards are in place to keep our election secure? David Becker is with us this hour. He's executive director and founder of the nonpartisan nonprofit Center for Election Innovation and Research.
And you, our listener, you are with us as well. Our question of the day, how much confidence do you have in the integrity of the 2026 midterms? Are there concerns that you're thinking about? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the live chat. And let's bring in a caller right now. This is John from Shillington, Pennsylvania. Hey, John, you're on Studio 2. What are your thoughts on this topic?
I worked as an election worker for 28 years as judge of election right there in the polls. And I would encourage people to get involved as an election worker. To see the safeguards that are in place. When we tabulate the votes, there's a paper backup to the thumb drives that go in. They're escorted by two workers in one car, and then they're tabulated on two computers, which are isolated from the internet. The system is solid. What I am worried about is election subversion by the Trump administration. The right is with the states. He's following the playbook of Charles Foster Kane from his favorite film, Citizen Kane, where he says fraud at the polls when he loses as governor. And he's been doing that before the 2020 election, and he will continue to do it afterwards. And we just have to be vigilant to stand up for our right to vote. And the Save America Act, I think, also violates the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause, because it is women, not men, who most often change their name from their birth certificate.
Yeah. And John, so, quick follow-up for you. I mean, as an election worker, are you hearing from folks who work in elections? Is there any concern about that there will be pressure from the administration to take certain steps or actions or anything like that?
There certainly is concern. I am hoping that in Berks County, where I'm from, as well as throughout Pennsylvania and hopefully the nation, that we will all stand firm. It is important. Any human system has errors. And, that was an argument against the death penalty because it's irreversible. Yeah. But a recount can be done. Mm-hmm. With the systems we have in place. And we have Jill Stein to thank for the paper backups in Pennsylvania, because she used her extra campaign money to ensure that after 2016, there would be enhanced, recount ability. Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's John from Shillington, Pennsylvania. And David, I wanted to sort of expound on what John talked about. You know, he's an election worker, and we sort of teased this in the intro that 2 in 3 Americans say that they are worried that officials will be pressured to change election outcomes. I know you thoroughly understand how the system works. And so I want you to sort of explain how the system has safeguards in place that would make that hard to do.
It's not only hard to do effectively, especially for a national election, it's impossible to do. One of the great safeguards we have in this country is that we decentralize our elections. There is no one single election authority running one election on Election Day. It's not even 50 elections being run on Election Day under 50 state laws. It's actually about 10,000 little elections in all of our counties and townships all over the country, run by our neighbors, members of our community. And it is bipartisan. It is transparent. There are multiple checks and balances inherent to the system that prevent any kind of widespread fraud or mistake from infecting the outcome. And if back to what John was saying, because I think it was so important, and thanks to all of the listeners who volunteer to be poll workers, who work in elections. We require hundreds of thousands of them for any election, and they do such important work. My own teenage son has done it a couple of times, and I'm so proud of him for doing it. And if you have any doubts about how our elections are run, volunteer to be a poll worker. Don't complain about it. Don't read stuff on social media. Don't listen to the grifters who are trying to get you to believe that your candidate didn't really lose. It's understandable that we're disappointed when our candidate loses. That's the most American thing ever. But what's not okay is to have those people who are sincerely disappointed be targeted for cons and grift. Mm. But if you have any doubt, call your local county election office, volunteer to be a poll worker. You'll see why poll workers get hours of training, why they have to show up hours before the polls open, why they stay hours after the polls close. They are checking and double checking and reconciling and recounting and auditing their work for a period, not just of that night, but over weeks to confirm that elections are secure and we get the right outcomes. Yeah. There's a reason why Obama controlled the federal government in 2016 and Trump won. Trump controlled the federal government in 2020 and Biden won. And Biden controlled the federal government in 2024 and Trump won. That should give us a lot of confidence that there's no thumb on the scale in these elections.
Let's bring in another caller. This is Pam from East Landing, New Jersey. Pam, you're on Studio 2. Take it away.
Hi there. I was just calling because I've been listening forever about all the election fraud, and I don't understand why there's only fraud when Democrats win. Why is there no fraud when Republicans win?
Yeah, fair question, Pam.
Yeah,
fair question.
Thanks, Pam.
And I think a lot of people have the same question. Susan from Delaware, echoing something we've heard from others, says, I work the elections. I'm frustrated about claims of corruption. The polls are not corrupt. We are careful. Jeff does have a concern. I'm worried about Russian interference and Trump staging a false flag event as a pretext to cancel elections. And then Allison chimes in, what about the fact that so many election deniers are in important positions? She says in Arizona, they're considering electing a denier as Secretary of State. The New York Times did some reporting just laying out, I think it was about 17 people that are pretty high up in the Trump administration who have in the past expressed skepticism about the veracity or the validity of the 2020 election results. Cash Patel, Kurt Olson, Dan Bishop, Heather Honey, and others. So I want you to address that, David. People who are concerned that there are election deniers in very important positions where they could, I guess, serve as a disruptor in the sort of election integrity chain and how that might look. Could you address that concern?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that those of us who work in the democracy space, nonprofits like mine, along with election officials all over the country, Republicans and Democrats, are working harder than we've ever had to work just to maintain a normal midterm election, because a federal government that used to be a partner in helping run elections is now openly an adversary and spreading disinformation and frankly slandering all of those public servants who are doing this really good work all over the country. But that said, the federal government by design has virtually no power over elections. That's a good thing. The founders passed or wrote into the Constitution, Article 1, Section 4. Nick referenced it before. It's called the Elections Clause.
Yeah.
And they specifically said that the states run elections. Congress also can write laws. But without congressional authorization, the federal government has no power. And that's why you're seeing an increasingly desperate and panicked White House with no power, who's been struck down every time they've tried to do something that's unconstitutional, get worried because they appear, I don't know how the election's going to turn out. I don't know if the Republicans or Democrats are going to do well in this election, but it does appear as if the president is worried his party is going to do poorly.
What about state level officials, very high ranking state level officials who've expressed skepticism? Are you worried about what they might do and what they might be empowered to do in
there
critical
junctures? Actually aren't that many of them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, if you, You know, it's true that there is someone running for Secretary of State of Arizona who has denied elections, but that was also true in 2022.
Right.
And that person lost. You know, in most of these places, Republicans and Democrats are standing firm for election integrity and for state sovereignty. You know, those 30 states plus DC that were sued by the DOJ, five of the last six are run by Republicans. And we're seeing a bipartisan coalition of election officials say we might disagree on policy, but one thing we won't disagree on is the integrity of our
elections. So that's a theoretical concern, but you're saying it's not an on-the-ground concern right now because there are no such officials in positions of power today.
I mean, not significant ones. I mean, there are some who have flirted with election denialism. There are some who have capitulated to the administration's demands. But if you're look at the primaries right now, we're about three fourths of the way through the primaries. They're literally being held today in many states. And all of those primaries are going remarkably well with very high turnout, mm-hmm. thanks to these election officials. And I really looked at the California primary, which is a great example, where the administration threw everything at California, slandering the work of election officials, accusing the state of fraud, tons of disinformation thrown at California. And yet at the end of the day, the people who were certified the winners advanced to the general election. We have the same outcome today in California as we would have had under any other president. It was just a lot of noise that required a lot of work to get past it.
By the way, I want to raise Janet's concern because Janet writes, I'm also really worried about the administration wanting to take away mail-in voting. I think that is very, very helpful to senior citizens and people who are disabled. And I want you to talk about this, David, because I know the Trump administration has again tried to take on mail-in voting and tried to eliminate it. He's also trying to institute the powers of the Postal Service. Could you sort of address Janet's fears and concerns that there's still a chance maybe that mail-in voting could be, eliminated before the election, even though the courts have sort of stepped up multiple times to make sure that that is not the case?
Yeah, I mean, the president's attacking mail voting, even though that's his preferred method of voting. He was in Palm Beach County where he votes and still returned a mail ballot during the Florida primary. But he signed this executive order that would have put huge restrictions on mail voting, completely unconstitutional. A federal district court judge blocked it. A panel of the First Circuit Court of Appeals blocked it. And it is now in the Supreme Court under an emergency motion by the administration. We just organized a group of almost 120 election officials, Republicans and Democrats all over the country, to file an amicus brief in that case. I expect the Supreme Court is not going to revive this executive order. We are less than 3 months away from the election. I would not worry about any of the restrictions that the administration wants to impose being done now. Even if something did happen, I think the courts would ultimately block it because it's just too close.
Yeah.
But that being said, the Postal Service is experiencing some capacity issues. And so I would encourage those who can to vote in person either early and as they can in 47 states, including Pennsylvania, New Jersey, or on election day. Those are the ballots that will be reported out on election night. If you need to vote by mail, that's great. It's available in three fourths of the states without an excuse. You should take advantage of that if that's how you prefer or want to vote. But if you want to make sure that there can't be any interference with your vote, you should try to vote in person if you can. And two big advantages are the campaigns will stop contacting you. And second, those ballots will be among the first reported out on election.
Oh, you sweetened the pot there. Yeah. Let's squeeze in one more caller. Mm-hmm. Joe from Haddonfield is on line six. Hey, Joe, you're on Studio 2. We are short on time. If you could keep it brief. What's your question or comment?
I will keep it brief. I just want to say I'm an election worker in South Jersey. Every person that votes fills out a form. They make their choices. That's scanned into a machine, and the paper ballot is saved. So at the end of the night, there are two ways of evaluating or counting the votes. You can't cheat. Every time, every worker station has a Republican and a Democrat there at all times, and in my view, the system is completely safe. And if it wasn't for Trump trying to get his will imposed here, there would be no problem.
Thank you, Joe.
The guy's no good.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay, appreciate that
perspective. And David, real quick, because Joe did bring up the machines, we had a commenter who was worried about the company Dominion, which has a voting machine company being sold, and what would that mean? I think a real quick explainer about how voting machine technology works and why it is difficult to program them to produce inaccurate results. And we are a little short on time, but real quick on the machines.
Yeah, there are folks on both sides of the aisle that blame the machines when their candidates don't win. But the machines are not designed to be perfect. No technology is. But voting machines are particularly resilient. They are tested before and after the election in public. They are kept under strict lock and key under chain of custody. They are not connected to the internet. And then really importantly, we have those paper ballots. That's why we've moved to paper ballots. Pennsylvania did it in between the 2016 and 2020 election. Really importantly, that's how, because we have those paper ballots that the voter has seen before they put the ballot in the machine, we can go back and see the same exact thing the voters saw with their own two eyes and confirm that that's the ballot they intended to cast, and then recount them if it's a really close race, audit them regardless of how close the race is. Those audits are hand reviews of the ballots compared to the machine counts to make sure they match. If they don't match, they keep looking at the paper. And so people should be, feel trustful of those machines, not because we trust them completely, we don't. It's because we don't trust them and we verify the outcomes regardless of what happened.
That is David Becker. He is the executive director and founder of the Nonpartisan Center for Election Innovation and Research. David, so appreciate your time today on Studio 2.
Thanks. Yeah. Great to be with you.
And I have to read this from another David. This one on YouTube says, I'm not concerned at all. And I've always had complete confidence in the American election system. I believe our elections are fundamentally strong and I trust the process to work as intended. And we hope that today's show will keep you a little bit more faith in the system as well. Got to say thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Hazel May Bryan, and Ben Abrams. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. And a closing thought from Stan on Facebook. Election integrity isn't nearly as much of a concern as the integrity of the candidates. And with that, I say we see you tomorrow.